As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 6, Episode 26. My name is Tim Mitra, and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I am joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
And we together are joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Going good. You ask us that every week, and every week it's still going good.
I think we need to start coming up with like really bad sob stories for when Jaime asks that question. Be like, and the truck swerved and the puppies.
I said that without asking. Like, yeah. And I wasn't really running. I was kind of walking fast.
And there were feathers everywhere. You know, kind of thing.
And there were 20,000 pounds of bananas. That's a deep cut. All right. I don't have any fact checks from last week. I can't.
Another perfect week.
Another Woo! Perfect week. Woo! Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll just jump right into the headlines. I've got the first one for a change. This should be to no one's surprise that Apple TV Plus production has now started canceling or putting on hold some of the production shots they have, like production TV shows. And they call them first look deals. Are suspended, and this is all because of the strike. So some of the casualties are, there's apparently a show by Natalie Portman coming out, our very own Queen Padme, and something by Martin Scorsese, but apparently that's still going to go through. So yeah, but more strike news, and then I'll hand it over to Jaime for some more strike coverage. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, along those same lines, because I was wondering, I was like, oh, how come there's like no ready room? Oh, that's right, because of the strike. They weren't singling out Lower Decks. I think, you know, they probably had already done the ready room stuff for Strange New Worlds and presumably had not done any for Lower Decks.
Yep.
So everybody's hurting with this. Everybody's finding a way to do new stuff. So ABC in the USA will air apparently an additional 10 Monday Night Football games. I was wondering why we were getting so many. It's kind of weird. So, you know, they air them, you know, at least one per week. Sometimes you get a couple in the same week on, you know, almost like a double feature on a Monday. But because there isn't, you know, a whole bunch of new content to share, you got to fill it with something. And apparently they've worked with the NFL to say, hey, what if you move some of these games from whatever day it was, likely Sunday, to Monday, so we could air some stuff and fill in the gap.
Wait till a few weeks from now, it'll be Tuesday Night Football and then Wednesday Night Football.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. Open just ended, you know, not too long ago here. Maybe they should do like another tournament, you know, like a Masters of Tennis tournament or just something, right? You get like, you know, Djokovic and Roger Federer and Serena Williams and Venus Williams, and you throw them in there with like a John McEnroe and Chris Evert or something. And, just put Billie Jean King is out there again. You know, you do something to just like make a
Battle of the Network Stars.
Yeah. as long as they're not doing acting type stuff, and I don't know the rules, but like clearly professional athletes are not actors when they're doing professional sports, right? So I think that's where you gotta fill with content of some sort.
Yeah, I think the network stars are already battling, Tim. I think they're battling the networks.
That's true.
And before we go off of the topic, I'll give a second plus one to Jonathan's choice. I don't know how many weeks ago of the Strike Force 5 podcast
with Samuel
and Fallon and Colbert and stuff. Like those five folks are like really, really fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, on the positive side of the television landscape, we are still getting a couple of new shows that were actually made before all this, all the shutdowns for the writers and the actors. And one of those things is Loki season 2. Loki season 2 was supposed to debut on Friday, October 6th, but given the success they've seen on Disney Plus with the primetime Eastern time zone dropping of episodes, they've decided to do the same thing with Loki. So we're going to see Loki dropping now October 5th at 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So, and subsequent episodes, same time of the week. So it'll be a more or less primetime show like they've done with Ahsoka. So they clearly have found something that's working.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And I feel like it also gives, since it's Disney Plus and that's owned by the Disney conglomerate that also owns ABC and stuff, like it probably also lets you fill in primetime somewhere. It's not on the air stuff. So I'm kind of curious what they put up against it.
Yeah, that's actually, it's funny. I never thought of how they are theoretically competing with themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why they were doing it on, Friday's kind of a weird day. I would say, not really. Yeah. High school football, like, it's not like they normally air that on television. So Fridays are, historically the doomed day to die for network television, like, Firefly or anything else that, we've moved this to Fridays. I'm like, yep, that show's canceled, right? Like, you don't even know it's canceled, but it's canceled. It's just doom. But streaming doesn't seem to follow that same sort of doom and gloom thing, probably because you can watch right then, or you can watch it on Saturday morning or whenever. And so I feel like choosing Thursday probably fits into that. Like, there was something they wanted to have there and they don't expect to have in their broadcast stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Next up. So last week we talked about the rather interesting development where the comic creator Bill Willingham had made his very popular series Fables into a public domain product so that he could sort of stick it to DC Comics over the fact that they were trying to basically assert rights that he felt they did not have in their contract. He thought it was a creator-owned product, which means he owns it, and that's what the paperwork he has seems to indicate. They seem to think that they can do whatever they want with it. And we were talking about it when it was just kind of breaking last week. So this week we got the aftermath of that announcement by Bill Willingham. And of course, the aftermath is exactly what you'd expect. The good folks at DC basically said they are exploring their legal options and they have hinted at a lawsuit to protect what they perceive to be their rights. So I will read you this lovely statement. The Fables comic books and graphic novels published by DC and the storylines, characters, and elements therein are owned by DC and protected under the copyright laws of the United States and throughout the world in accordance with applicable law and are not in the public domain, the statement reads. DC reserves the rights and will take such action as DC deems necessary or appropriate to protect its intellectual property rights. Shocking development, large corporation plans lawsuit.
What?
So, yeah, I don't know. It's unprecedented.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I guess I'm not surprised. I think that was probably where this was inevitably going to head. But, I will definitely keep my eye on this story and let you know as it develops, because this is an interesting case for creator rights and artist rights. And I'll be curious to see if this is another one of those cases where big business crushes little talent, which seems to be playing out in a few different arenas right now. I had to flag this next story because it made me laugh out loud. So every year we get weird and wacky Christmas tree ornaments. We've had some really funny ones. Tim, I think one of the high water marks for you and I was the resurrection of Anakin Skywalker as Darth Vader that hung on the tree that had a sound. Mm-hmm. When you played the button, it said, no, it was really awful. Just a genuine atrocity to hang on your tree. This one, this is a new high watermark. So this being a Star Trek podcast, we will tell you that there is a new Hallmark keepsake ornament available this year that features Data from Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek Picard, and his cat, Spot, who I assume in continuity is probably long dead, mm-hmm. wherein you have this beautiful little ornament where it's Data wearing his TNG uniform, wearing his classic outfit, holding Spot, and when you press the sound button, it plays the poem that he wrote, Ode to Spot, from the classic episode where in Riker is being kidnapped at night and can't sleep, and he falls asleep during the poem. Felis catus is your taxonomic nomenclature, an endothermic quadruped, carnivorous by nature.
Is that what he says when you push the button?
Yes. It's actually Brent Spiner's voice, and it is him speaking the poem that he read in the show.
Genius. Okay.
Genius.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other ornaments they have on this article below, are these new as well? Or
yeah, there's
for example.
It's worth mentioning there are a few there. So there's the Picard and Scotty one. There's a badgie for those of us who are big Lower Decks heads. Yeah, there's some really good stuff. But yeah.
Hand of Apollo. Don't forget
Hand of Apollo. That's right.
That one's nuts.
Yeah, aren't they great? Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them coming here. Two different badgie ornaments, it says.
Yeah, and the Enterprise, too. The Enterprise with the planet that changes color.
Yeah, so that's a tabletop. It's not an ornament that you hang on your tree, but yeah, very cool.
But there is an Enterprise you can get with Kirk, right? Running with Phaser.
Running with Phaser. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Scotty and Picard one is a really weird random one too, where it's just the two of them standing there shaking hands, like, yeah, all right.
Hmm. Yeah, it's you know, just imagine you have like sort of casual non-fan person showing. I mean, I think we see, you know, an Enterprise or something. Like, oh, okay. Like, I understand what that is. But then you see like, hey, what's with this dude holding a cat? What's that about? And then you have these two old men sharing like a whiskey or green Kool-Aid if they don't know that it's like a drink, an alcoholic drink. Like, what's up with this? It feels like an icebreaker kind of moment.
Yeah, it's an unusual one. And, you know, of all the moments from TNG, and, you know, I'm a Scotty fan, but of all the moments in TNG, really? We needed that moment? Like, that was the one? That was the moment they wanted to single out?
Well, of Data, yeah.
No, not of Data, the one of Picard and Scotty.
Oh, yeah, that I don't understand that one at all.
It's, you know, yeah. Although, I must admit, I'm tempted by the badgie. There's good badgie and evil badgie, and they come in the same box.
Yeah. Of course, I'm scrolling through the Canadian site. I can't find any of these Christmas ornaments on the Canadian version of the site.
That's usually how it goes.
Yeah. Oh, ornaments. I guess that's where I should be looking.
Tim, you know the neighbors don't like this. It's okay. Okay.
The junk uncle, you mean?
They're jealous. It's okay. It's okay. We know.
Yeah. Moving on.
If you're looking for something to stream, this is already available now as we record this podcast, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem is available on Paramount Plus in the US and Canada.
Mm-hmm. Started watching it last night.
Was it on already? Oh, yeah, 19th, I guess, right.
Yeah, did we have a news item where this was stated, this particular day? Because I feel like it came out of nowhere, available.
I agree. I think it was just there. I honestly didn't notice it was there till I saw you put it into the notes and was like, what do you mean it's already there?
Yeah, and they usually have like for me, if I don't see an explicit announcement of this sort of thing, I'm usually sort of keeping mental track of, oh, okay, it's available on Blu-ray and DVD. Okay, so not that long after, you know, maybe like a month after, it'll be on streaming. This one was just like, surprise.
Yeah.
Makes no sense to me whatsoever. Like, this is a property that you should definitely be getting people hyped up for. Like, this is why you go spend some money on Paramount Plus. For your kiddos, for the family, for whatever. Again, when Paramount, you know, that company has CBS. So if CBS is struggling with what are we going to show during the strike, it's like, well, you probably could have made a big, you know, moment out of this too, instead of randomly releasing it and people not knowing it's there. But hopefully if you listen to this podcast, now you know.
Yep. I watched the first half last night before I went to bed, and I enjoyed it. It's an interesting take on it, but it was a little derivative. It definitely felt like they were like, hey, have you guys seen Enter the Spider-Verse? You're going to dig this.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Well, no doubt. I mean,
it, animation style, the vibe, just, yeah. It's funny. It's good. I enjoyed what I saw. I'm a Turtles fan, but it was, I couldn't help but a few times be like, come on. Like, come on.
It looks a little painterly, like, compared to the other.
It's not as well done. It is very well done. I did enjoy the animation style, but it's not quite at the caliber we've seen in the two Miles Morales movies.
Right. That's unfortunate. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we're at that part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related, and this time it is once again Star Trek's Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 4, Something Borrowed, Something Green. Dun, dun, dun. Which immediately made me think of Orion. Orion? So what do you guys got for elevator pitches?
I'll go first. Some things in life require more than a murder bug or a Mark Twain wig to fix.
Mm-hmm. And Jaime?
I went with something a little bit more straightforward, which was that, Tendi's sister is kidnapped. So she and Mariner and Tilin need to go find said sister. And on the B side, you have Boimler and Rutherford are struggling as new roommates.
Brotherford.
That, I mean, we might as well just go into that quote. Nothing can stop Brotherford was one of my quotes that I picked up.
Yeah. And mine is everybody loves a bonsai.
Yeah.
All right. Any pew pew in this one?
Oh, I thought the murder bug game was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, with the shots, right?
Hopefully you've read it. You watched it if you're tuning in to listen to us. But the idea is it's a drinking game where every time you do a shot, it puts a force field around your hand, and your hand has to stay in place on this table. And this really nasty looking bug is going to attack you, so you have to keep doing shots while it travels back and forth between you and your opponent. That was very, very funny. Very, very funny. The line from Mariner, I'll just jump ahead to one of the quotes, was, Tendi, how are you so good at the murder bug drinking game?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's my first time.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure. I like how she captures it with the highball glass, right? So
yeah.
Cool. Yep. That's how I catch wasps. I need to go outside. I like the banter between the two roommates Mark Twain. Mark Twain.
That was like a great passive aggressive pew pew pew.
Yeah, definitely. That was
cool. And it's a good Easter egg as well, because the Mark Twain character came up, I think, several times, if I'm not mistaken, on TNG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so did we jump to the Easter eggs? I see you got
Have the twin twins. It's one of those great moments where I'm always very, give myself a little pat on my bald head. And I wrote down twin twains, and then one of the characters said twin twains. I was like, there it is.
No way.
Yeah.
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 And have we seen Rutherford's model of DS9 before?
Yeah. I feel like we did see that one at one point, right? Because he was working on it at one point when they were.
Well, he was doing one where he had a little warp core and he had to dump the warp core to escape.
Yeah,
it was another ship. It wasn't the.
Yeah, maybe we haven't seen a DS9. I'm trying to think of all the because he's always building models, right?
Yeah, and you could see Jack's or not Jack. Boimler's. What do you call it? His action figures on the shelf as well.
Yeah.
And that there was a gray sort of structure, which I think was an Easter egg, but I couldn't place it. I don't know if you saw it was beside the DS9 on the shelf.
Oh, I'll have to look. Yeah,
definitely have to figure that one out. I'm sure somebody will post it.
Yep. Or the other one that I got was the Tendi just mentioned it in passing, but it made me laugh when she said, "Oh, it's just gonna be a traditional Orion wedding. Oh, they're gonna want us in pictures of us in our belly dancing outfits." That was a great belly
dancing,
deep cut, but excellent. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Right back to the very first show, the very first pilot.
That's right.
Right, Orion slave girl.
Yeah, this episode had. Sort of a fun time of like, trying to avoid the, stereotypes are a certain way, painting an entire peoples with a broad brush, and then like giving us both halves of that, right? Of like, oh, the family is straight up like this. right? You have people who are just straight up Orion pirates. You have the, you know, the pheromones thing, but then a little bit of a twist of like the pheromones thing is real and not a, what's my, is my item here? You know, not a thing that Starfleet had to explain how a captain got taken out by slave girls. It's a real thing, but not everybody has it. So that was kind of an interesting way to pull it together to give you some space where like somebody's got to be the scientist, right? Somebody had to develop warp capability. Somebody had to develop weapons and stuff. Not everybody was around there plundering loot and doing all these weird sort of things.
They did that whole episode about, you know, the crossover episode they did with
the science,
the science, right? Where they had like the, oh, they, you know, they actually did, oh, they had scientists, right? Yeah. That was the episode they did of Strange New Worlds with the Orions.
Yeah, Strange New Worlds. And so have we come across, I mean, I don't know, I don't know if the female pheromones is an Easter egg too, though, because did we explore that in Lower Decks before?
I don't know that they actually did. They've certainly explored a little bit more of the Orions because they had the Orion who came on to the ship and they did the exchange, right? But I don't think they really got into the pheromone part of it there.
Yeah, no, I like the matron who's at the end of it says to the guy, "Lick my feet."
There's a Mariner quote from there, that area that of the show that like I had to write down, which is Mariner saying,
"I hope you did, Jaime." That I caught it too.
Pretty nice hump dungeon. I think they have one of these in New Seattle.
Do they have those in old Seattle, Jaime?
Not that kind of thing where you the consent part seems a little odd here. It feels like some people intended to go there to get taken in by the pheromones and some maybe had like a street tout or something.
Yeah.
Describe something different and they really didn't want to be there.
Yeah. Where do you think New Seattle is? Do you think New Seattle's on Earth or is that on another planet?
Mm. I was wondering about this as well because I was thinking about, you know, have we heard anything in the lore about where a new Seattle would be? So for folks who are thinking just of Earth, it's like, you know, you have a York and then a New York, right? All right, that kind of makes sense. And then since we know that there were things like the Bell Riots, there was World War III, all sorts of things where you could have had, you know, current Seattle get destroyed and replaced by a new Seattle. And to your point, it could be on a completely different planet or moon or something. So I don't know. I hadn't considered the planetary interplanetary perspective on it. I just kind of assumed, maybe it got destroyed during one of the wars or something. And they made a new Seattle vaguely approximately close in the Pacific Northwest, but could be elsewhere. I don't know. Did anything strike you as a likely location?
No, I think I probably took your approach of, you know, there is still supposed to be this disastrous 21st century that we currently live in that sees all these, you know, terrible things happening. I assume that at that point, Seattle goes up in a flash of light. And then from the ashes rises New Seattle filled with hump dungeons. I don't know. I was thinking, like, where would I want it to be? I'm like, I don't know. It'd be cool if it was on the moon. That'd be neat. But you know, Seattle kind of fits where it is.
But you know, there was a show I used to watch in, I think, the early 70s, like, that was like sort of Seattle frontier town. Like, maybe that's where the reference comes from, like, in terms, like, because it used to be, I guess Seattle must have at some point been part of the, what do you call the Wild West, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Because it was a port town, right?
Yep.
Yeah, indeed. So, because I'll look it up while you guys are talking about other things, because I do remember the actor that was in it, I'm just trying to find it now.
Jaime, are you old enough to remember Dark Angel?
I was going to bring up the Jessica Alba front piece of Dark Angel, where, for folks who don't recall, this was a, I guess, post-apocalyptic kind of show where I don't remember who did the big EMP, electromagnetic pulse, over the U.S. and took everybody's technology out. So you have like a Mad Max, but not out in the desert. This was, you know, in the gritty town of Seattle.
Yep.
Really?
But without power. Yeah. No power for anything.
Yeah. So it's, you know, think of like, you know, like The Last of Us, The Walking Dead, Mad Max, the what happens when you don't have access to basic electricity and hygiene and stuff. And if you remember the promos for the show, if people remember at all, you almost certainly remember Jessica Alba being on the top of a very unique looking building. Yep. That is the Space Needle that she's on top of.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was. I actually enjoyed that series. It's James Cameron was the EP on that show, and yeah, I actually enjoyed that when I watched the first season. Probably better than the second one, but it kind of leaves on a cliffhanger, which has bothered me for 25 years. They never had a chance to finish it. They did, I think, on as I have the DVD box sets, which I'm sure they don't make anymore. There's a scene in it where they, or one of the bonus features in it, they talk about what would have happened in season three, but still not the same. Come on, Jessica, you're still a young woman. Get out there. Make this happen. You're powerful.
It's interesting. I've seen a lot of shows with EMPs, and I didn't realize that they all followed that formula that was started by Dark Angel. I never actually watched Dark Angel. Yeah, back in the day.
Well, if you ever want to borrow the multi-disc DVD sets, I'm your person. I do remember the funniest part of that show was in the effort to try and seem slightly futuristic that they were all driving Pontiac Aztecs, if you'll recall, were those weird ones that had like the tent that stuck out the back. It was kind of huge, giant sort of SUV station wagon crossover thing.
My boss used to have one of those.
Yeah, it just there's a lot of scenes where they're driving those, and they're just like, "Ooh, we're in the future." I'm like, "God, I hope that's not the future."
Yeah.
Best quotes for this episode. My, there was so many. This one, I feel like you should have on like a motivational poster from Talin. Celebrating a lack of purpose is illogical. That really hit home in an unpleasant way. It's like Grandmama Boimler used to say, a cool duvet keeps the raisin rats away. I love it when they reference Boimler's family raisin farm. That just never is not funny.
Mm-hmm.
We're barely the fifth largest family in the syndicate. It's Tendi humble bragging about her family's wealth. You got the pretty nice hump dungeon. That was a great one. How are you so good at the murder bug drinking game? Niall's got some speed for being a big old hunk of ham steak from Mariner. That was pretty good. She always gets the best line. Tanya Newsom's awesome. From Kokor, the alien that they encounter on the Cerritos, Kokor says, "We don't trust Starfleet data. It's too nuanced and thorough."
Yeah.
Which, as somebody who works for a data company, that could be applied to some of the provinces and territories in this country. But anyways, why am I wearing this itchy hair hat when they make Kokor and Freeman dress up like Mark Twain's? Again, so stupid, but so funny. God. And don't worry, we know you're a big nerd and not some hot assassin. Yeah, Mariner, always coming through. My big question for this episode is how many daggerings is too many daggerings? Because we see three of them, and then back on the ship, Mariner says she got stabbed a fourth time.
Yeah. Even when she hid behind like a console or something, the deflected knife.
What are the odds?
Yeah. The same hole, too, yeah.
Yeah. My big question is related to one of my quotes. So the lower deckers, the Orion lower deckers, where they have a quote where one of them says, you know, we're not real pirates. We deliver supplies to real pirates. We're like pirate adjacent.
That's a good one.
So those are the latest lower deckers that we've seen get wiped out by the mysterious spacecraft. So my question is, which species will we see next?
Ooh.
We're not that far into the series. It's only, you know, episode 4. So I don't think we're going to see the big emergence of the big bad yet.
No, it's gotta be the Borg. It's got to be a Borg in there, right?
Nah.
You don't think?
Something different.
Cardassians?
That's too convenient.
It's not Cardassians? What are they called?
The right way? It's like, I don't know. Yeah. Good question.
It's an odd one for sure.
Yeah. I did note it at the end of the episode because I kept hearing voices and thinking, I know that person, but I can't place it. I know that person, but I can't place it. So I paused in the end credits to see because I knew some of those voices. So I wrote down 4 of them that I knew were people that I recognized. So, I don't know which parts they played. I didn't have a chance to look it up. I didn't have time tonight, but I'm sure we can always do it in the facts check next week. But Kimiko Glenn was one of the voices. She was one of the stars of Orange is the New Black. She's very good. Nolan North was one of the voices there. He has been a voice in a lot of different things, but most notably, he was Snake in the Metal Gear Solid games.
Hmm.
Or sorry, no, not Snake. He's Uncharted. He's... Nathan Drake in Uncharted. That's what I'm thinking.
Right.
Lauren Tom is one of the stars of Futurama. And Ariel Winter from, what's the name of that show? I never watched it.
Modern Family.
Modern Family, that's the one.
That's right. Or perhaps Stars on Mars. Hmm.
And there was other names there that I kind of rang a bell. I saw Kari Wahlberg or something like that. Again, another voice actor that a name I recognized.
Yeah, I thought it was
Kari Wahlgren.
That Sorry. Guy, the Canadian dude from the Three Comedians. Smartless. I
love this game.
Smartless. Mm-hmm. Smartless.
Jason. Oh, Will Arnett.
Yeah, that's what I thought that the one guy talking was, but I guess not, right?
I didn't see him in the credits, but okay. Yeah.
And yeah, in the ship that was got that gets he was the male Orion.
Yeah, I thought he rang a bell. That might have been Nolan North. I don't know. I didn't have a chance to look up who was whom, but I guess we'll see how we do on our Slack channel. Don't forget to join our Slack channel and be part of the conversation. We have a good time there.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, we've had our appetizer. Are we ready for the main course?
Well, before we get there, can we not discuss the Worst Contact?
Worst Contact?
Yes. Did you watch Worst Contact?
I did not. Is that
Short Trek?
That's the new Short Trek. Day.
I know. I didn't have time to watch it.
Oh, well.
So, yes, we cannot discuss that.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's disgusting in a 10-year-old boy way, right?
But, okay.
Yeah, like
well, now I want to watch it. Look what you've done.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my intention.
Yeah. I saw it that it had popped up and I thought, I gotta watch that before the show's on, but it's been a week, so
it was below the ornaments, that's why I ended up watching it.
Right? Oh, nice.
Scrolled to the bottom and I saw, oh, look, there's, and you guys hadn't posted it. I thought, that's odd. But yeah, no, I highly recommend that, you don't.
And you know what I'll be doing after the after show.
100%. Or during the after show.
Or, yeah, maybe that. We'll see.
We'll just shake hands on that. We got a deal.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let's move.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Going to Madame Ahsoka Tano, the White, Star Wars, Ahsoka, Part 6, Far, Far Away. So when last we saw our intrepid travelers, they were getting inside of a big giant whale.
Yeah, positively biblical.
Heading off to New Horizons, as it were, right? So
further, further away. Well, I decided to go whimsical on this one. A long trip is always worth it. To see familiar faces when you get there.
Hmm. Oh, going to see Uncle Thrawn, are you?
Well, I was thinking more Cousin Ezra, but you know.
Oh, Cousin Ezra.
Uncle I mean, Thrawn, everybody Cousin got to Ezra. See the person they were looking for, right?
That's true. True.
I mean, what'd you have?
I had right now in a galaxy far, far away, we see that Thrawn is still up to his old tricks.
Right now.
Right now in a galaxy far, farther, farther away. Did it strike you at the beginning of this episode starts with Ahsoka and Huyang inside the Purrgil flying through the hyperspace path towards their destination, and she says, tell me a story, and he starts the story with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, which of course no one's actually uttered in any Star Wars series. It was kind of interesting thing. I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, but it was a thing.
Well, that was one of my quotes, but I mean, but he starts to say, he says, you want me to tell you a story? And she says, no, I don't think so. And then they talk about something else. And then finally she says, okay, fine, tell me a story. And he goes, okay, as you like.
Yep.
And he carries on with one long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
We'll never know what happened.
It was very striking to me to see the imagery. So even though it's not really a pew, 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 I did write down that the Purrgils at what I'm going to call transwarp, for lack of a better term, would make a great like screensaver or desktop background. It was so beautiful to see that. It was very stunning.
I did capture those for the show art this week, but thanks for wrecking that for me.
We're just going to step all over each other tonight. All right, here we go.
Yeah, cool. Do you have a pew? Well, pew pew, I think I 100% agree. Sabine versus, you know, 10 guys, right?
Yeah, that was, again, it's so funny because, you know, she's been kind of denigrated in this series. You know, she's up against these very high-powered force users, and she's not that, but she's still a great fighter, a Mandalorian with Mandalorian armor tricks, and she's not too bad with that lightsaber, and she kind of goes pretty badass on those bandits.
Yeah, I second that as well. I wrote down Sabine fighting what I'm calling the Ruskin traitors, because I'm sure they have a real name. I didn't see the captions. It did feel very, you know, Tusken Raiders taking on Luke Skywalker sort of thing. But Sabine is much more capable of fighting than young pre-Jedi Luke was.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because we did comment on the fact that she left her helmet behind. Although hopefully Ahsoka's got it in the trunk, but the Beskar sure is a heck of a thing, isn't it? Like, she got shot in the chest like 4 times.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't pull out the lightsaber until quite late in the fight, right?
Yeah, I think she's trying to sort of not pull out the big guns quite yet, and then they just keep shooting her. And again, of course, nobody can hit her in the head where she's not wearing armor, but they keep shooting her, and eventually she loses her bag of tricks being a Mandalorian and is like, okay, it's time to go full Jedi on these goobas. And I like when she's fighting the last guy and she just keeps chopping pieces off of his staff until he runs away.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good.
I'm sure there were a ton of Easter eggs in here. I pulled 2.
Right.
When she's searching for Ezra, she pulls out a life form scanner. It was very similar, if not the same, to the one that we see Han Solo using when he's looking on Hoth for Luke, when Luke is injured by the Wampa and hard to locate and makes the same noises and does the same thing. That was pretty good. And the other one I had was the Chimera, which is for Rebels fans. And again, sometimes we talk about whether or not you need to watch Rebels. You don't need to know that that's the Chimera. But when you've watched that series, you know that that is the flagship for the Grand Admiral. And it's definitely looking the worst for wear. It's missing some parts, but it's still a pretty badass looking Star Destroyer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like there was a design similarity or some metaphorical echo. So I wrote down as a vague Easter egg hunt the elephant graveyard concept for the Purrgils. Mm-hmm. That these Purrgils come here to die on this not so great planet. And then the sort of semi-skeletal Star Destroyer sort of seem, you know, because it's falling apart from not having you know, a crew that's hanging around and being great and resupplied and all that stuff, probably scavenged to some degree. The witches, I assume, are being held together by evil magic because they seem actually pretty good, but also really freakish and unreal, unalive, undead, perhaps.
Yeah, although, I mean, the Night Sisters from Clone Wars and Rebels always look a little rough. So, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, when you dabble in that much dark magic, I think the idea is that it corrupts from within, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was, again, big picture on this episode, I was like giggling like a schoolgirl as I was watching this, because it was just, for a fan of the animated universe, it was just all these elements coming together. The Night Sisters, mm-hmm. and Thrawn and Ezra, and, you know, all of these things were sort of happening at once. And it was just like, oh, this is so satisfying.
What are those little guys with the shells called? Do we know?
They did say in the episode, they just called them, I have it written down here, the Noti. They are called the Noti. But yeah, that's like the species, I think, not the name. So yeah.
Yeah, because isn't that when he says we have to, like, we have to pay, help them pack up or whatever?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the closed captioning at one point, when she meets the first one, it says Little Noti. And I thought, oh, maybe that's Little Noti, as in, like, that's the person's name. But then later on, it says Speaking Noti. So, Noti, I guess, is the species, not the person.
Cool.
Before we get to the questions, I want to run through some of the quotes. Intergalactic space travel inside a star whale. Now I really have done it all. That was Hu Yang. Great line. David Tennant. Awesome. The Great Mother. It reeks of Jedi when she points at Sabine. That's just, I don't like, weirdest stab ever. Like, it reeks of Jedi.
And that's an extreme sort of take, because we've at least heard in this series that Sabine is like the worst possible Jedi from like the Force.
The last one, yeah.
And if she can tell, like, oh, this one's, would you say, reeks of Jedi? Like, reeks, yeah, that's saying Jedi. A lot. Yeah.
She's like, well, thank you. Thank you very much. I do reek of Jedi. Thank you. this is a land of dreams and madness. Children's stories come to life. And Baylan talking about Peridia. Ray Davies, so good. God, it just makes his passing just that much more tragic. He's so good. Right. He's so good. As you get older, you look at history, you realize it's all inevitable. The fall of the Jedi, the rise of the Empire, it repeats again and again and again.
Yeah.
Baylan. That's a killer line. It's good. And again, great delivery. So good.
It's a good one, and it actually was my big question around, is there a theme that's going to end up happening in this series or in the connected series of, like, you know, some theme of getting older, wiser, and seeing those repeating cycles.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly does seem to play into the sort of take that I've had around Baylan, where he seems to be taking a not really good, not really evil, but like pragmatic approach of, like, let's just stop these stupid war cycles and just, like, these people are in control. Are they terrible? Fine, but at least they're having order in place, so we're not bashing each other with sticks.
Yeah. Well, we'll circle back to that one in a second, because I think there's definitely some stuff to unpack. From Thrawn, your desire to be reunited with your long-lost friend, how that singular focus will reshape our galaxy. To Sabine about Ezra, that was, again, speaking of great performances, Mikkelsen was excellent. I'm so glad that they cast him. I know he's not a bang-on match for the character, but the voice is so important. He's so perfect. The way his cadence in the cartoon series and his cadence in this, he's just so measured and thoughtful. The same actor who did the voice on the Rebels series.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And there was a lot of people were sort of saying, well, you could with some makeup, maybe. And so again, if you see them side by side, you're like, no, but then neither were, you know, the some of the Inquisitors and everything. Like, you gotta take some liberties. Yeah. But again, his voice is just, it's so cool and calculating and sinister, and it's just perfect. It's just absolutely perfect.
Oh, you're talking about Thrawn. I think we're talking about Ezra.
No, for Thrawn. Just so perfect. No, Ezra was recast. It's not the same voice actor.
The Thrawn actor, I forgot his name, but he
it's Lars Mikkelsen. Yeah, Lars Mikkelsen.
Yeah, he definitely has that sort of slow, deliberate, you know.
Yeah. Just measured, creepy, calm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody is safe around him. Like,
no, because he's he's a genius. He's just constantly
calculating. Yeah.
Figuring out how to rip your heart out without actually touching you. It's so sinister.
Yeah. He's not afraid of the Night Sisters, for example, right?
No. But again, he knows exactly how to behave with them to get what he wants.
Yeah.
Like, he's working everybody. He's working everybody all the time. He's just, it's delicious. Just such a wonderful performance.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I could count on you, though it sure took you long enough from Ezra when reunited with Sabine. Again, great line. I like the young man they have cast as Ezra. Like, I wasn't sure when I saw his picture when they cast him. I was like, well, okay, we'll see how he looks once he's sort of done up. But yeah, absolutely see it for sure.
I mean, he's supposed to be older now, right? Like,
yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. Mm-hmm. The beard's a nice touch. He looks, I was thinking very Kanan Jarrus that he's got the beard now. So again, it's kind of a moment, right?
Yeah.
Any other quotes?
The trooper Enoch, I think was the name with the weird, like, gold mask face.
Yeah, that was weird.
Tells Sabine a very sort of Klingon-esque die well on her journey into the wastelands.
Yeah, that character is very unusual. The mask thing. I've seen much debate in the social sphere this week over is he gonna pull a Maul? Are we gonna see this guy get chopped in half before he has a chance to do anything? And then again, all the hype earlier this season about, you know, who is this character, who is this Inquisitor, and it turns out to be just like a pile of animated dust, and you're like, oh well, never mind. Because a lot of people were like, oh, maybe Enoch is a secret character, and I'm like, no, he's just a bad guy with a weird mask. Like, calm down. I can't say, like, there's one thing Star Wars has done exceptionally over the years is cool characters in masks. This is not one of them. That is a dorky looking mask. I'm not in. I don't want the action figure. It's very weird. I don't like it.
Which one?
Enoch.
Oh, the gold mask guy?
Yeah.
Dumb looking. Looks dumb. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've done that a lot with a lot of the droids and stuff with the sort of C-3PO bodies, but a different head. It just looks wrong.
Well, I was wondering about the armor. So, you know, Thrawn says at one point, you know, our time here has, you know, cost us plenty, basically. Like, we don't have the troops to spare. And when you see at one point when the troops are assembled, you see some of their armor is mended with what looks like gold. And, of course, we see the gold plate on Enoch's face. And it made me think of, and I can't remember the name of it, and Tim, you might know, there's a Japanese art form of,
where you
of
fix mending
things with gold, right? And the idea is to show the flaws, to highlight, you know, the flaws inside things and see the beauty in them. And I was like, I wonder if that's deliberate that way, or if it's just supposed to be like, they're supposed to be able to see that, like, their armor had to be patched because they've been there long and clearly it hasn't been easy.
The design made me think a little bit of King Arthur's son Mordred from Excalibur. And I don't know if that was me just connecting some dot that's not actually meant to be connected, or if that is some intentional subliminal design messaging of some sort. You certainly do stand out. It's going to make a cool, you know, action figure, you know, and people are going to talk about the character regardless of what they end up doing, just because it is kind of an interesting design. It's weird. But I wasn't sure. Have you all seen that that movie Excalibur? You know what I'm talking about?
That's been a long time, but yeah.
The one with Patrick Stewart in it?
We went to that castle, Tim.
Yeah. Did we? Yes, that's true.
We did.
And that's the same castle where they shot the last duel, I think, as well.
Yeah.
By the way, the name of that craft is Kintsugi.
Right. That's what it is. Yep.
Yeah. Centuries old art of repairing broken pottery with gold.
Again, just that's what sort of popped into my mind when I saw it just was so distinctive to see it in gold. Normally you'd be like, oh, it's all sort of fused together with, you know, duct tape and you know, rubber bands. But the fact that it was gold was really interesting.
Yeah.
So two questions. And we talked about this one in previous. Who is calling to Baylan? What is calling to Baylan? Baylan says, can you not hear it? He's talking to Shin and he says, you know, something is calling to me. Can you not hear it? So he's got a different purpose there than Thrawn does. And it's particularly obvious that, you know, Thrawn just regards Baylan as a disposable part. And he's like, you know, hey, when
no threat,
when they get there, just kill them all, will you? And like, oh yeah, piece of cake. Just kill all the guys with the lightsabers in the forest. That's always worked out well. But I that's the big mystery to me is still like, what is the thing? What is the thing that is this Baylan's bigger purpose, higher mission he's got going on here?
Well, I think you have to go back to, I mean, you have to go into Rebels and sort of some of those, you know, the episodes where they, or even Clone Wars, where they start with the red titles, you know, know, because they had, had Darth Maul and his brother, right, was one. They had a lot of Dark Sister episodes, right? What was the name of that Sith at the very beginning of, I think it was Clone Wars, it was a female Sith.
Oh, Asajj Ventress.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't Sith either. She was Dark Jedi because she was Dooku's apprentice, but never actually got into the club because only two there can be.
Yeah, and where did she go?
I could tell you, but it's a spoiler. Would you like me to tell you?
Sure, I've seen the whole series. I've just completely forgotten.
So because Disney has canonized new books, new comics, new video games, those are considered canon.
Yeah.
Her story actually plays out in a novel that came out a few years back, where she teams up with Quinlan Vos, who is one of the remaining Jedi. And in the story, they become a couple. And by the end of the story, Asajj Ventress dies.
Oh, okay.
Which is a huge bummer because I am a massive Asajj Ventress fan. I that is an action figure I do have. And I love that character. She is so cool. And I loved the sort of dirty flirting between her and Obi-Wan throughout the Clone Wars, where they're like fighting, but you can tell that they might also want to be using other parts on each other. Yeah. I thought their chemistry was crackling, and I really enjoyed that the performance by the two of them in the performances on the show. But I found that out. I have not read the book, but I found that out once it happened, and I was genuinely bummed because I thought she was such an interesting character, and I sort of was invested in her throughout the Clone Wars, and really kind of bummed that she didn't get any kind of conclusion.
She joins forces with Ahsoka at one point, right?
She does.
When Ahsoka's on the outs with the Order.
Because Palpatine finds out about her existence that Dooku has a secret apprentice and basically says,
right,
either you kill her or I kill you. And Dooku's like, okay. So Dooku basically tries to have her killed and she ends up surviving, but then she's sort of out on her own. And then she sort of becomes a mercenary and a bit of a bounty hunter in some of the stories.
And she ends up helping Ahsoka when Ahsoka's on the run too.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, again, I was bummed that we didn't get to see a proper send off for that character that I had an investment in. It, to me, killing her off in a novel felt very cheap, but you know, these things happen. The other question I had, which I think I know the answer to, but I'm curious if you will agree, is what is the cargo that they are loading into Thrawn's ship? Now, I'm going to say it was very explicit. They said, catacombs at one point, and it sure looked an awful lot like those were coffin-sized pieces.
Yeah. Maybe they're bringing the dead Sith back to Palpatine.
I'm curious. I don't know if it's because it's supposed to be.
Because remember, there's a whole gallery of Sith in the last movie that you hate so much.
Yes.
Because there could only be two, right?
The one we do not speak of. I wonder if it's that. Because they say that Peridia is. The place where people come to die, right? It's the place where the Purgles come to die. I wonder if it's the place where Sith come to die, or the idea is that they always kill each other. But I wonder if it's Sith, or I wonder if it is more Night Sisters, and we're going to see sort of the rekindling of the dark magics. Because again, the episode ends with them referring to the Night Sisters and saying, we're going to need more of your dark magic.
Yeah.
And to me, that made me think, I wonder if those are Sith bodies that will be reanimated by the grandmothers, or if that's going to be an army of the undead, an army of Night Sisters and Dathomiri, right? So that's like Maul and Savage. And there was just, I'm going to throw this out here as a theory.
Okay.
This story would happen after the events of Clone Wars and Rebels, obviously.
Yeah.
In Rebels, we see the ultimate fate of Darth Maul, right? Maul's obsessed with finding Obi-Wan. Maul finds Obi-Wan. Get spoilers. You had your chance. He's prepared for this big duel. Obi-Wan kills him in about 2 seconds. And that's the end of Darth Maul, the really true end of Darth Maul.
Right.
I am really strongly thinking that Maul is one of those bodies.
Mm. But why would he be on that planet?
Because that's where they put the Sith bodies.
Oh, okay.
It's the Sith burial ground, just like it's the Purgle burial ground.
Warehouse. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, right. So they are the Sith bodies.
So it's not just bringing back... the Night Sisters aren't just bringing back, like, random people.
Mm.
They're bringing back fallen Sith warriors.
Right.
So maybe we'll see Maul, Savage, who knows, right? That's, again, just pie in the skying it. I want Jaime's take on this, because I feel like maybe I'm out in left field here, but I just... Yeah, something about this seems right to me.
I think I miss how... Maybe I'm missing a connection. Like, so how does Maul end up going from one planet to this planet?
So maybe they, you know, again, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they dig up his body. Who knows? Maybe they're, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking like, it's kind of a shame that you were never going to see Maul again. It's a shame we're not going to see, because again, now as soon as they brought the Night Sisters in, I was like, oh, okay, well, that ties us closer to Dathomir, and of course Dathomir brings us back to Maul and Salvage Opress, and I was like, wonder what they could do to bring that back. And the other part that kind of was a tip for me was there is a rumor out there that Sam Witwer has, or it's not a rumor, he said he has something to do with this series, and Sam Witwer was the voice of Maul on Clone Wars and Rebels. He could be playing another part. He is a very talented voice performer, but I wonder if there's going to be some way for the Sith souls to go into other bodies, or Sith bodies and other souls, or there's got to be some weird dark magic resurrection kind of something happening with all this.
Yeah, they did have the Inquisitor that was like a spirit in a suit.
Yeah, the Maruk one, yeah.
And people are wondering if the same thing stands true for the gold face Enoch person.
He's actually dead.
Yeah, he's dead, and it's like a zombie or a ghost in a suit kind of thing.
Yeah,
so could make sense. Yeah,
yeah. Either way, I think we all agree that this series started out a little slow across the first two or three episodes, but 4, 5, and 6 have been banger, banger, banger.
So on the follow-up angle here, Here Comes the Brides was the name of this show that I couldn't remember the name of, from that covered the early logging days in Seattle. And of course they had to get the bride, so they did the mail order bride thing, right? It's got some interesting stars. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Bobby Sherman, but he was like a heartthrob back in the 70s, like with Donny Osmond and all those kind of guys, and Jan Michael Vincent. But Robert Brown was the connection to Star Trek how I remembered it. He was the character. Remember the character that kept jumping? He kept fighting this guy that they can never see, and it turns out to be an antimatter guy kind of fight on the original series. Do you remember that one? And every time you saw him fight, it would be like the video would go all reversed.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's Robert Brown, who played the bad guy there. So Bobby Sherman was one of the brothers. And the third brother was David Soul. You may have heard of him. And also in this show was Mark Leonard.
Oh.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of people in here. Rattle off some names. The guy who played Chief O'Brien. Was it Chief O'Brien? What was the name of the chief in the Batman series?
Chief O'Hara.
Chief O'Hara. Played him. Yep. You know? Let's see. The guy who played, you know, the black and white guys who were the can't you tell,
the reverse completely ones, different. Yeah,
not the Frank Gorshin guy, the other actor. His name is Lou Antonio. There's somebody named Ed Asner. I don't know if you can't place his name, you know.
Yeah.
William Shallert, who's in a lot of Disney stuff, right? And Vic Tayback, you remember him?
Oh, and the name rings a bell. I'm sure if I looked him up.
He's from the Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Alice TV show.
Okay.
And some guy named Jack Albertson. And Alan Hale, Jack Albertson's the old man from Willy Wonka.
Oh, okay.
And he also was the mechanic in Chico and the Man, or if you ever watched Freddie Prinze.
No, that was a bit before my time.
Yeah, and then Alan Hale Jr. played, what's his name, the Skipper.
Yep.
Bill Mumy was on that show.
Cornucopia stars.
Cornucopia. And these are just some of the bit players, right? I'm rattling off. But yeah, Jane White was in that one too. Yeah, it was not a very, very 70s show, but I don't know if it was a comedy, but it had its funny bits. But yeah, there was a whole bunch of like teen heartthrob magazines, and Bobby Sherman was one of the guys who'd be on the cover all the time. So yeah, if you had sisters, you had those magazines. All right, so are we moving on to our watch list?
Yeah.
All right, so John, you're up first.
Yeah, so something I'm looking forward to, so The Continental from the World of John Wick, yeah. That's the full title. That starts on Friday, September 22nd. It's a three-part series. I have not seen any details on the release schedule, so I don't know if they're just dropping all three or if it's week by week. I would imagine it's week by week, given it's Amazon. But looking forward to seeing the expanded John Wick universe. This is the first John Wick without John Wick. But yeah. The trailer looks really fun, and yeah, I'm curious to see if they can make more out of this world, because I think it's pretty rich. It's pretty rich tapestry. They've started with the first four movies, so yeah.
Yeah, have you seen the fourth movie yet?
No, actually, it's funny. Xavier and I were just talking about it the other day, because he just rewatched three, and we have a copy of four, and I said, okay, so this weekend is when we're sitting down to watch four and then The Continental, so that's going to be our plan for catching up, I think.
Yeah, I started watching it on the plane, but then I thought, you know, I think you have to be in the mood to watch that. Cause so I ended up watching, I think, Women Talking instead.
Oh, that was really good. Second, Joe, I just, I wanted to check in with you both. So, finished obviously last week was the season finale of Foundation season two. I think I brought it up sort of over the course of the season that I was enjoying it, but, the second half of season two, again, just they were ripping off good episode after good episode after good episode. It really ended strongly and, and they really have kind of set the stage for, I think, what a lot of, Tim, you had mentioned, and a lot of, I think, Foundation fans are really looking forward to the era of the Mule coming up in season three. They have not confirmed for sure that they're doing a season three, and I don't think they're going to announce it anytime soon because obviously the strikes that are going on, but I loved what I saw in season two. There was so much fun, and it was inventive, and it was, you know, twisty without being obnoxious. I thought sometimes they went a little too far with the twists and turns in season one, but season two was really, really good. The performances were really good. And I really hope they come back and do a season three, because I'm into this world now. I hope they continue for a few more. It felt very Game of Thrones-y, kind of, you know, epic and, you know, big bad guys. And yeah, just a lot of fun.
I do have a couple of things to say about that. One is I don't like the way they're introducing the Mule. Like the way they introduced the Mule in the books was just amazing.
Trying to find a way to get the Mule in early because so many people were excited to see the Mule.
Yeah. And they kept talking about Second Foundation, and they kept trying to break Second Foundation. The name of the second book is Second Foundation. So, you know, spoiler alert. but the thing the problem I had with this particular show, if we can just talk about it for a second, was the regeneration of Empire. Right. Because, and I'm going to speak in Foundation tongue, so people who haven't seen the show won't know what I'm talking about. But, I mean, the whole concept of the three day, dawn, and dusk is that it's meant to be that it's the same clone of the original emperor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot his name though. Clovis or something like that. But anyway,
Cleon, I think.
Cleon, yeah. And so when they regenerate all three at the same time, I always thought that they would just start with the young one, and then he would grow through his life and become. So Dawn would be the young man who would then ascend to be the main guy. He would be Day, and then he would get old and become Dusk. Right. And so they would just keep, as Dusk passed away, they would just go back and get a new Dawn. Right. But in this case, they regenerate all three of them at their various ages. It made no sense to me. Like, why would they, as from a clone, generate Dusk, for example? Like, what's the point of that? You know, hey, welcome to the world. You're about to die in like 10 years. You know, like, doesn't make sense.
I guess they were trying to show the different aspects, and
yeah,
I know, again, I don't know as much as you do, Tim, having obviously read the books, but I do know that,
a lot of what we've seen in the stories isn't in the books.
Yeah. I've heard they've taken quite a bit of liberties to try and glue some things together and try and sort of amalgamate some of Asimov's concepts that were just maybe a little too hard to grasp in a visual medium.
But he did. I mean, he did have I mean, over time, I'm sure he evolved it, but he did have a grand history that he was working from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So did Heinlein did the same similar thing. Like they would build these huge worlds, and they would basically that would be their sort of, you know, their storyboard that they would work from to write the various small novels within each section. And but the thing about the Foundation book, it was written in like the 50s as a 50s pulp science fiction, so it wasn't as thorough as you would expect in 2023, which is why they're doing what they're doing. That's my opinion. You know, because nobody would watch it if it was as dry and slow as the 50s version would be, right?
Still it amazing concept, right? It's just it's not as punchy as a modern audience is looking for.
I mean, in terms of like where he goes in terms of story and concept, I mean, it was phenomenal, right? But yep. I mean, I read it in like the 80s, right? So I'm sure if I read it today, it'd be like I've gone back and read the Galaxy books. There's a series of books, right? There's the Empire books. There's the robot books. There's the later robot books. There's the Galactic Galaxy books about the expansion of man across the various galaxies. And then they all come together in the Foundation series that he did at the end, too close to his end of his life. Right. So, yeah. So he kind of brought the whole thing round and full circle.
I mean, did you watch the final bit of the season?
I haven't seen Foundation, no.
No? Okay.
So he has no idea what I just said.
Not even the slightest clue.
Then it won't matter.
I remain unspoiled.
Yeah. I didn't really spoil too much. I did watch Doug Days, though. Carl's Date.
Yeah. What a sweet ending for the Carl Fredrickson character, you know? So we talked about this. This was the one that they had put in theaters with the Pixar Elemental movie this year. And so Elemental and Doug Days, Carl's Date both dropped on Disney Plus last week. It's a nice, sweet, little short, 6-7 minutes. Make the time to watch it. It's basically, you know, Carl fretting over the fact that, you know, he's got asked on his first date. And of course, we know part of the story of Up is just how, you know, devoted and loved, in love with his wife, Ellie, who passed away, he is. And so he has this sort of great anxiety about what to do. And of course, Doug has to, you know, become the logical one in the duo. And it's so sweet and, you know, a beautiful fitting send off for the character and for Ed Asner, who of course passed away. And this was his last bit of playing this character, but, yeah, cute. Funny, sweet, exactly what you want.
All right, what you got, Jaime?
Season 2 of Winning Time is complete, and this is presumably...
Is it complete, Jaime?
Did he win the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, exactly. I will say for folks who haven't seen Winning Time, the story of the Los Angeles Lakers in the 80s when the reign of Magic Johnson... I definitely thoroughly enjoyed season one. Mm-hmm. Season two, I think, has a little bit of a significant bit of a sophomore slump. I feel like the meta outside of the show stuff impacted this. Like, I suspect they kind of knew they may not get a third season. They could certainly do a third season, but it felt like this season was sort of a speed run through the 80s. Whereas the first season was like, hey, here is the 1980 season.
Yeah,
I guess 79 to 80 season. This one starts out, I want to say in 84, gives you a little flash forward and then flashes back, shows you speed run of like 81 and then spends, I think, most of its time in like 82 going to maybe 84. I kind of started getting lost on that. And so if it was a thing where you could have, you know, from, I guess, semi-spoilers, from 1980 to, let's say, 1988, I don't know that they would necessarily have 8 seasons worth, but you could make, you know, 3 to 4 seasons out of that pretty easily, right? So this one, it's kind of weird to call it to end on a downer. It kind of ends in more of a epilogue than anything else, which is really, really weird. It didn't fit with the show.
It was... maybe the worst ending to what I thought was a good show that I can recall. It was so obviously like killed as opposed to finished. Mm-hmm. I again, I'm a basketball fan. I'm an NBA fan. I've read books about that era. I lived through some of it. I thought that there was some real highlights in this show. The two young men they have playing Magic and Kareem were great. I really liked Adrian Brody's performance as Pat Riley. He was definitely the sort of high water mark of this season, I think, in that whole, you know, the power dynamic, what's going to happen between Paul Westhead as the coach and Magic as the player, which of course we've seen play out now for the last, that was like a real moment in sports where the player had more power than the coach and the coach lost the fight. That was the beginning of a player empowerment era that continues to this day. And telling that story in the way they did was really good. So they start the season with this flash forward to 1984, and then they end the season in just 7 episodes later. They spent the first like 5 or 6 episodes building up to this sort of storyline of like, we got to beat the Celtics. And then in the final episode, they lose the 1984 finals to the Celtics. And then it just comes up with this epilogue that lists off like all the things that happened in 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91. And Jeannie Buss ends up getting the team because her dad died. Like, it's just... it's the worst. It was the worst, most slapdash, pathetic, kick in the pants for anybody who watched it, I thought, of any show I can recall in a while. It was just...
Revenge of the Sith?
Okay, but that's a movie, too. I mean, again, like, there's been some terrible movies. There's a checklist
at the back. And, you know, the last 20 minutes, he's got to check off all the stuff, right?
Oh, I mean, it was just so... the pacing of this season, as Jaime mentioned, is just so awful to spend that much time in the middle and not talk about the actual like winning of the titles, finally overcoming Boston, which they did the very next year, which would have been season 3, or they could have told it if they'd had.
So they're not doing a season 3? Is that the thing?
Oh, it's canceled. They announced this as soon as the show finished airing, they announced it was canceled. And you tell when you got to the end of this episode, you're like, there's no chance this show is coming back. Not any at all. But it's so stupid because, again, the whole series starts with Magic Johnson's press conference to announce he has HIV in 1991. This is one of the most seminal moments in like global sports history. Is this like maybe the best player, second best player in the NBA at the time, announcing he's got HIV at a time when HIV was a death sentence. Like, and then they don't even pay that back off. They're just like, and he married Cookie and all that. Like, just...
and he lived, right?
Garbage. Just absolute garbage ending to this series. I'm so disappointed. And again, I get it. It didn't click with everybody. They were in the problem that you run into by telling a true story in that you can try and go off in different ways, but you can't really... like, the character that was... Jerry Buss's wife, his new wife in the show, character didn't exist. There was no Honey, whatever her name was. They were just kind of trying to sort of amalgamate things that had happened into sort of larger story pieces, you know, and that ticked off a lot of purists. So the real NBA fans and the real Laker fans were like, well, this is dumb. And, you know, they made the Boston Celtics and the people of Boston look like the biggest scum in the planet, as well as Larry Bird. So a lot of people were ticked off by that. But yeah, maybe I just need to calm down, but I was so disappointed by the end of this series. And I agree with you, Jaime, it wasn't as good as season 1, but I thought there were some good moments in this season. And I still think this series could have gone on in a different world where we're not talking about the costs of everything and, you know, all the circumstances we're dealing with. I think this could have been a great little four or five seasons covering the 80s. Circling back to Magic's, you know, diagnosis, or even better, they could have just skipped ahead and started telling like more Lakers stories and told us about the Shaq and Kobe era. There's a great series to be written about that. Like, this just was the worst thing you could have ended it on. And they lost to the Celtics. Magic's crying in the shower. And then we're just going to list off everything that happened after that and a bunch of screens. Like, shut up.
Yeah, it's so weird because that would have been an awesome ending to season 2. Like, holy smokes, I can't wait to see season 3, right? Like, you know, surely they will overcome in season 3. But to not let it have that, it does kind of end with a Jerry Buss as Poochie going back to his home planet sort of epilogue ending.
I have to go back to my home planet now. Poochie died on the way home.
So I guess, you know, it's hard to call Wikipedia of historical events spoilers, but if you wanted to know, it's like the Celtics win 81, 84, 86. The Lakers, however, I don't know. Let's start counting with 80 because people naturally do that, right? 80, 82, 85, 87, 88.
Yeah.
So I definitely did like, is it Michael Chiklis? It was Red Auerbach. Like just hateful
so good.
Owner. So good. Cocky and egotistical owner of the Celtics. Like he was so good as like playing the villain there. And you're right. They did. They definitely made the Boston fans and team look like absolute supervillains in this.
Yeah, Chiklis was fantastic as Red, and the young man they had playing Larry Bird was so like his shot even looked like Larry Bird's shot. Like there was some really cool moments in this series. Again, obviously super hard to cast. You're never gonna get these guys who are actually the proportions. You know, like in the real world. You know, Kareem is like 8 inches taller than Magic. Like, come on. But yeah. There's only so much you can do when you're casting things. It is what it is. But it's just like, oh my God, it's so... It just could not have ended in a worse place. Like, the whole series was like Jerry Buss versus Red Auerbach, the Celtics versus the Lakers, these two dynasties going head-to-head in the moment that made basketball matter for America. And we just stopped in 1984. Like, shut up. All right, I'm going to go take some Xanax and you can go, Tim.
All right, my turn. Well, speaking of stuff that just sort of showed up on the... I don't know how I saw this, but I think I was just cruising around yesterday. I knocked off a bunch of shows that I had piled up on the various streaming services, and I just went over to... Paramount to see what was going on, and I saw The Fablemans, which I hadn't seen yet, which is the biopic by Steven Spielberg about his, you know, his early life and up to the point where he meets John Ford. And I gotta say, like, I started watching, I was thinking, oh, I'll watch maybe a half an hour and then I'll go to bed and whatever. I ended up staying up till like way after 3 because it is such a good movie. It's like, you know, typical Spielberg, just pulls it off again. So I can't highly recommend the Fablemans enough, right? So it was really good. Paul Dano plays his dad. Michelle, what's her name, plays his mom. Michelle Williams, yeah. And the two sisters, the girls who play his sisters are pretty cool. And then it's a bit like Back to the Future in that sense, because it's like early 60s, you know, 50s and 60s kind of stuff. And, you know, growing up being a Jewish boy in a, you know, Christian high school kind of thing and just really good. And all about how, I mean, I've seen some of his films that he made as a kid before. They're all listed on his IMDb page, in fact, right? Going back to the early 60s, right? So, yeah, I mean, like, if you're a fan of pretty much anything he's ever done, like, you know, Indiana Jones or, you know, name a Spielberg movie that you've seen, like, it is as good as any of those. I very rarely give a movie a 5-star rating on Letterboxd, but this one definitely earned it for sure. So it would have been, and I think it was pretty high. I think it opened the Toronto International Film Festival last year. Phenomenal movie. Mm. And then since you guys brought back the stuff you've been watching, I don't know do you want to say anything about that before I go?
No, I definitely added it to my watch list when I saw it dropped, and I'm glad you enjoyed it because you have tend to have similar tastes. So
yeah. I mean, it's if you're into the craft of making films, it's really really cool. I mean, you know, we have some of the equipment here in our basement that he was working with, Super 8s and stuff like that, right? So and he had an eye, like as a little kid, he had an eye, right? So. Which is hard to come by. And since you guys brought back some of the shows that you've been watching as well, I'm watching Reservation Dogs season 3. It's a story about a bunch of young Indian Native American kids growing up in Oklahoma in now time. They did a last episode was actually a flashback to the 60s, which was kind of really interesting. But I didn't make the connection. But one of the main characters, his name is Alora, and her actual name is Alora Dannon something or other, right? As her parents named her after Willow, and There's a bunch of Willow references in the first season, which is kind of interesting if you dig into that kind of stuff. But it's a really good, really good show. I mean, some of the actors are really good. I mean, the young Native American girl that was in Ghostbusters, she plays a really interesting character in this movie, or in this TV show, I should say. And it's season three, so it's like, you know, quite a few episodes in. Invasion season two is well underway. I think I mentioned Invasion last when it ended last year. I kind of thought it had a bow. It had been wrapped up in a bow, and kind of where could they go from here? But they're actually going there. So interesting sci-fi, and it's a mix of there's Japanese scientists and American scientists, and they kind of all sort of, it's the world trying to solve this problem, right? So. Of this invasion from another planet. And I don't know if the morning show is season three or season two. Season three. So season three has dropped, and it continues to be a really good show. So, and it's very current. I mean, at the end of season two, the main character played by Rachel Green, what's her name? Jennifer Aniston. Yep. comes down with COVID. As part of the storytelling, right? And so we pick up where, you know, now COVID is done, and now they're into the stuff that can happen in the season three. So I'm not going to ruin the plot lines, but yeah, it's really good. I mean, and it's what's that newsroom show you used to watch, John? I've never watched it, but it's compared to that in terms of by the critics. So
yeah, I've heard the comparisons. I'm curious. I had heard people talking about the first season, and the common phrase that I've heard for the show is it's the best worst show on television.
Best worst show?
Yeah. The best worst show on television is how somebody described it in season one. And then again, talking about this season, saying that it is both horribly terrible and also incredibly compelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, it's interesting. I'm not sure if I want to invest in that or not.
Well, it's not as smarmy as daytime television can be, but it definitely has that sort of 30 Rock, you know, that other show that the other guy from Friends did, kind of, you know, like about TV production.
Studio 60?
Yeah, something like that. Like the, it's got that sort of same sort of feel to it. And it's, you know, it's a bit of a dynasty and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there's some really good actors in it, right? This year, John Hamm's in it as a sort of an Elon Musk type character. Mm-hmm. But Billy Crudup is like phenomenal in this. I mean, like he played like as he's the CEO of the network, right? So, and he's just really, really good. So, I mean, like you'd love to hate him.
Does he jump off a building yelling, "I'm a golden god" at some point, or?
No, he doesn't do that. But yeah, but I mean, compared to Almost Famous, like it's almost like it's a different actor. Like he's that good. Like I actually was watching him yesterday going, is that the same guy? You know? So yeah. I mean, he kind of was the other show I watched, the Hello Tomorrow, whatever it was called, was a bit similar to this character, but he's pretty good in it. And of course, you know, all the other actors are, I mean, it's not all about just Jennifer Aniston and that, it's ensemble cast. So, you know, pretty good. I do recommend it if you're looking for a diversion, and it's, you know, it's bingeable now because it's got 2.5 seasons out there, right? And that's it for another week. So Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, X, and Instagram as @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. My name is Timitra, TimMitra. On the Twitter machine is where I can be found. Until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.